Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week and for the next few episodes as we hear stories about the holidays. This episode is all about winter holidays. For further information about winter holidays for children, I suggest www.learningliftoff.com. Our first story comes from Scandinavia. In Sweden, on December 13th, the people celebrate St. Lucia's Day. Here is the story of St. Lucia. Long ago in Sweden, during the darkest month, a girl shivered as she gathered firewood in the snow. This time of year was usually a celebration of the winter solstice with feasting and fun. But this year, starvation was on the land. The people of the town had taken to grinding tree bark into flour for food. To keep cheerful, the girl's father told stories. Her favorite was about a young woman named Lucia, who lived a long time ago and far away. She was a young girl who chose to follow the Christian God. She also refused to be married as her family wished. Ultimately, she was declared to be a witch and sentenced to death for disobeying the wishes of not just her family, but the ruling government as well. One day, her parents sent her out to the lake, which was a short distance from their house. She was to pick up pieces of wood that had washed up on the shore for kindling. It was very dark in December. In Sweden, the sun never rises at this time of year. Tired, she stopped for a moment and turned to look at the lake. She noticed a tiny light out on the lake. A ship in the winter? She watched. Yes, it drew closer. The light on it seemed much brighter than the girl had ever seen on a ship before. Curious and a little fearful, she dropped the firewood and ran along the shore towards the other townspeople who were gathering wood there. She cried, "Look at the light on the lake! A boat is coming!" The ship's light cast a glow as bright as hundreds of torches. Who came in the dead of winter in such a blaze of glory? At the prow stood a young woman dressed in white. The townspeople suddenly realized that there were no torches on the boat. The bright light seemed to radiate just from her. She held a basket filled with breads and other foods. "What is happening?" people murmured as the young woman came ashore. Silently, she handed out food. She seemed to be giving out warmth and love, too. There was plenty for everyone. Then, without a word, she went back to her ship and sailed off to another town, two other hungry people. The girl gazed after her, thinking of her father's story. She walked home with enough food till spring and enough wonder for a lifetime. The next story comes from Japan. Their celebration of New Year takes place on December 31st. Just like our New Year's Eve, Omasoka is celebrated at the beginning of the New Year, but quite different from the traditional American celebration. As part of the celebration, children are told traditional Japanese stories. Here is one of them, entitled The Tale of the Bamboo Cutter. One day, while walking in the bamboo forest, an old childless bamboo cutter called Takatori no Okina came across a mysterious shining stalk of bamboo. After cutting it open, he found inside it an infant the size of his thumb. He rejoiced to find such a beautiful girl and took her home. He and his wife raised her as their own child and named her Nayotake no Kaguya Hime, Shining Princess of the Supple Bamboo. Thereafter, Takatori no Okina found that whenever he cut down a stalk of bamboo, inside would be a small nugget of gold. Soon he became rich. Kaguya Hime grew from a small baby into a woman of ordinary size and extraordinary beauty. At first, Takatori no Okina tried to keep her away from outsiders, but in time the news of her beauty spread. Eventually, 5 princes came to Takatori no Okina's residence to ask for Kaguya Hime's hand in marriage. The princes eventually persuaded Takatori no Okina to tell a reluctant Kaguya Hime to choose from among them. Kaguya Hime concocted impossible tasks for the princes, agreeing to marry the one who managed to bring her his specified item. That night, Takatori no Okina told the five princes what each must bring. The first was told to bring her the stone begging bowl of the Buddha Gautama Shakyamuni from India. The second, a jeweled branch from the mythical island of Horai. The third, the legendary robe of the fire rat of China. The fourth, a colored jewel from a dragon's neck. And the final prince, a cowrie shell born of swallows. Realizing that it was an impossible task, the first prince returned with an expensive bowl. But after noticing that the bowl did not glow with holy light, Kaguya Hime saw through his deception. Likewise, two other princes attempted to deceive her with fakes, but also failed. The fourth gave up after encountering a storm, while the final prince lost his life in his attempt. After this, the Emperor of Japan, Mikado, came to see the strangely beautiful Kaguya Hime, and upon falling in love, asked her to marry him. Although he was not subjected to the impossible trials that had thwarted the princes, Kaguya Hime rejected his request for marriage as well, telling him that she was not of his country and thus could not go to the palace with him. She stayed in contact with the emperor, but continued to rebuff his requests and marriage proposals. That summer, whenever Kaguya Hime saw the full moon, her eyes filled with tears. Though her adoptive parents worried greatly and questioned her, she was unable to tell them what was wrong. Her behavior became increasingly erratic until she revealed that she was not of this world and must return to her people on the moon. The gold that Takatori no Okina had been finding had in fact been a payment from the people of the moon, sent down to pay for Kaguya Hime's upkeep. As the day of her return approached, the emperor sent many guards around her house to protect her from the moon people, but when an embassy of heavenly beings arrived at the door of Takatori no Okina's house, the guards were blinded by a strange light. Kaguya Hime announced that, though she loved her many friends on Earth, she must return with the moon people to her true home. She wrote sad notes of apology to her parents and to the emperor, then gave her parents her own robe as a memento. She then took a small taste of the elixir of life, which had been given her by the moon people in advance of her departure. She wrote a letter to the emperor and attached a small vial of the elixir of life to it, giving it to an officer of the guard. As she handed it to him, the feather robe was placed on her shoulders, and all of her sadness and compassion for the people of the earth were forgotten. The heavenly entourage took Kaguya Hime back to the moon, leaving her earthly foster parents in tears. Her parents were overwhelmed with grief. The officer returned to the emperor with the items Kaguya Hime had given him as her last mortal act and reported what had happened. The emperor read her letter and was overcome with sadness. Carefully, he prepared one of the most beautiful letters he had ever written. In it, he expressed his eternal love for her. He asked his servants, "Which mountain is the closest place to heaven?" To which one replied, "The great mountain of Suruga province." The emperor ordered his man to take the letter to the summit of the mountain and burn it, in the hope that his message would reach the distant princess on the moon. The men were also commanded to burn the elixir of immortality, since the emperor did not wish to live forever without being able to see her. The legend has it that the word immortality, Fushi, became the name of the mountain, Mount Fuji. It is said that the smoke from the burning of the letter the emperor placed there still rises to this day. And of course, Mount Fuji is indeed a smoking volcano. However, his efforts were in vain. Kaguya Hime never returned to her earthly home. Our next story celebrates the winter solstice, which is when the sun is farthest from the earth in December in the Northern Hemisphere. It bears some resemblance to two separate stories written by the Brothers Grimm. When you have heard it, see if you can guess which two stories they are. Here is A Visit to Mother Winter, with permission from Starhawk. Once there were two sisters, Joanna and Zelda, although they lived so long ago that no one remembers their true names. Zelda, the elder sister, was very beautiful to look at, but she wasn't kind. In fact, because she was so beautiful, she went through life expecting everyone to do favors for her and let her have her own way, and often enough they did. Joanna, the younger sister, was different. She was kind to everyone she met and helpful, especially to the older people in her village. She was always doing favors for them, and she tried to make sure they were comfortable and had enough to eat. Joanna was rather plain to look at, not ugly, but certainly no beauty. Only people who were wise enough to look beneath the surface of things would notice her beautiful spirit shining out through her eyes. One day, Joanna and Zelda were spinning beside the little well that supplied their cottage with water. Joanna was twirling her spindle to twist the thread when she dropped it altogether. The spindle went rolling and bouncing into the well. "Now look at what you've done," said Zelda. "You better go right down into that well and get that spindle. We can't afford to lose it." Joanna was afraid, but she knew Zelda was right. They didn't have enough money to buy another spindle. So she lowered herself carefully into the well and began to climb down the rough stones. She climbed down and down and down until the circle of light from the top of the well became a tiny star and then disappeared altogether. Still, she didn't find the bottom of the well, but she had to go on. She had to get that spindle, and so on she went. After a long, long time, she finally felt solid ground beneath her feet. In surprise, she let go of the stones. The well disappeared, and she was standing in the middle of a broad field of silvery snow. She could see no sign of either sun or moon, but the sky seemed above her to glow with a silvery light, and in the distance she could see a grove of trees with white bark that seemed to shine from within. Joanna began walking toward the trees and soon found herself on a path that led beneath them. She walked on, keeping a sharp eye out for her spindle. At last she came to a clearing. In the center of the clearing was a huge old apple tree. Its boughs were covered with silvery snow and weighed down by apples with silver-red skin. "Pick me, pick me, pick me," the apple tree said. "My limbs are going to break under all this fruit. Harvest me, help me." Joanna looked around and saw a big basket at her feet. "I'll help you," she said to the apple tree, and she got right to work. She picked all the apples she could reach, and then she climbed up high into the tree to get all the fruit that grew on the upper branches. As she picked, she began to feel strange and dreamy, to remember all sorts of things she thought she had forgotten, as if the apples were her own memories she was gathering. She grew very tired, but she didn't stop until she had picked the last one. Then she climbed down, thanked the tree for its fruit, shouldered the basket, and started off again. The path led back into the forest of silvery trees, where silver birds called high above her, and silvery gray squirrels ran along the snow-clad branches. She was tired and the basket was heavy, but she continued on, still looking for her spindle. At last she came to another clearing. In this clearing stood a big old-fashioned brick oven. In front of the oven was a large wooden table, and on it were trays of unbaked loaves of bread, all nicely risen. "Bake us, bake us," the bread cried out to her. "We will spoil if we aren't baked right away and for just the right amount of time. Help us." "Of course I'll help you," Joanna said. "I know how to bake bread." She set down her basket and put the trays of bread into the oven and then sat and watched while they baked. Again, she felt dreamy and sleepy, but this time she found herself thinking about all the things she wished for and planned to do with her life, as if the loaves of bread were her own hopes and dreams baking. Tired as she was, she didn't let herself fall asleep, but kept checking the bread until it was golden brown and crusty. Then she took it out of the oven, let it cool, and added it to the apples in her basket. She thanked the oven for its bread and started off again. She walked on through the forest where silver foxes darted among the trees and white hares left tracks in the snow. At last she came to another clearing, and there she saw a house like none she'd ever seen before. The house was made of every good thing to eat she had ever imagined. The walls were made of honey cake and gingerbread. The roof was shingled with white icing. The steps were blocks of hard candy and the railings were candy canes. The eaves were studded with peppermints and gumdrops and chocolate kisses. Joanna was very hungry, but she knew it was not polite to start chomping on somebody's house without asking permission. So she went up to the door, which was made of a big lemon cookie, and knocked. The door opened and Joanna saw a woman. At first, the woman looked very, very old to her, but when Joanna looked again, she seemed quite young. Her face was as dark as old wood or the young night sky, but when Joanna blinked, the woman was white and pale and silvery as a full moon on a field of snow. One minute, Joanna wanted to jump into the woman's arms and cuddle in her lap, but the next minute, she found herself almost too afraid to speak to the bright, fierce eyes in the woman's face. "I am Mother Winter," the woman said. "Who are you who comes knocking at my door?"
"If you please, Mother, I am Joanna," she answered. "I have come searching for my lost spindle, and I bring you a basket of apples I have harvested and bread I have baked."
"You've come to the right place," Mother Winter said. "All lost spindles come to me, and you have brought me good offerings. I will help you, but before I do, you must work for me. You must chop wood to keep me warm, and clean my house, and make my bed."
"Gladly, Mother," Joanna said, and she got right to work. Because she had always helped the people in her village, she knew how to split wood with an axe, sweep floors, and clean the tables and wash the dishes. Mother Winter watched all that she did and was pleased with her.
"Now, all you have to do is go upstairs and make my bed," Mother Winter said. "Be sure to shake my feather bed out of the window and shake it hard. I am Mother Winter, and when you shake out my feather bed, you bring snow to the places in the world that get snow and rain to the places that get rain." So Joanna went upstairs and shook out the feather bed as hard as she could, and sure enough, in the upper world, snow and rain fell on the earth.
"You must be tired and hungry," Mother Winter said. "Come, have a drink of my soup and eat some supper."
On the hearth, Mother Winter had a big cauldron full of steaming soup. She handed Joanna a dipper, and just for a moment, Joanna caught a glimpse of what was inside. The brew in the cauldron was dark as the night sky and studded with swirling stars and snowflakes.
"In my cauldron, you see all your dreams and possibilities," Mother Winter said. "Everything that has been and everything that is yet to come to be is all brewed together. Now have a drink."
Joanna drank, and the soup tasted better than all the candy and cookies in the world. It was nourishing and refreshing and exciting all at once, and yet that one sip satisfied all her hunger.
"Here is your spindle," Mother Winter said, and she handed it back to Joanna.
When Joanna took the spindle in her hand, it felt heavy, and when she looked at it, she saw that it had turned to solid gold. Then she and Mother Winter feasted on bread and apples.
"You have done well," Mother Winter said when it was time for Joanna to leave. "You have brought me good offerings. You've fed my fire and cleaned my house, and you have shaken my feather bed good and hard. When you return to your world, you will find that you have gifts with you, for I am the giver of gifts and the teacher of lessons."
So Joanna returned all the long way through the silvery woods, past the big oven, past the apple tree, out to the open field, where a dark circle hung in the sky like an open mouth. Joanna raised her golden spindle, and a thread of light beamed up into the darkness. Then, as if something above was reeling in the thread, she found herself rising and rising until she could feel the old stones of the well under her hands and feet. She climbed up and up, and at last she clambered out of the well. Zelda was waiting for her impatiently.
"Where have you been?" she asked. "What took you so long, and what has happened to you?"
For Joanna looked quite different from the girl who climbed into the well. Her features hadn't changed, but now her plain, kind face seemed to glow with a light of its own, and the goodness of her heart made her quite beautiful. She opened her mouth to tell her sister everything that had happened, and as she spoke, gold and silver and precious stones dropped out of her mouth and covered the ground.
"You've had quite a time, I can see," Zelda said. She was very jealous. "Why should you get all the good things and me none? I'm going down that well for myself."
and she hopped over the edge and climbed down the well. Sure enough, she soon found herself in the silvery land and walked across the snowy field and through the forest path under the silvery trees until she came to the clearing with the big apple tree.
"Pick me, pick me," the apple tree said. "My limbs are going to break under all this fruit. Harvest me, help me."
"Ha," Zelda said scornfully. "Do I look like a gardener? Don't you think I have more important things to do than waste my time picking apples? Let them rot."
And she walked on. Soon she came to the clearing with the old brick oven and the loaves of bread on trays ready to be baked.
"Bake us, bake us," the bread cried out to her. "We will spoil if we aren't baked right away and for just the right amount of time. Help us."
"Ha," said Zelda scornfully. "Do I look like a baker? Do you think I have nothing better to do than sit around watching some dumb bread cook? Let it spoil. What do I care?" And she walked on. Finally, she came to Mother Winter's house, made of all the most wonderful things she could imagine to eat. She was hungry, and so she broke off a piece of the gingerbread wall and began to eat it. The door of the house opened, and Mother Winter looked out.
"I am Mother Winter," she said. "Who are you, and why have you come here? Why are you eating my house without even asking permission?"
"Excuse me," Zelda said. "I was hungry. I've come because you gave such wonderful things to my sister, and I think you should give me some gifts, too."
"Oh, you do, do you?" Mother Winter said. "What offerings have you brought me?"
"Offerings?" Zelda said. "I didn't know I was supposed to bring offerings. I thought you were the giver of gifts."
"I am," Mother Winter said. "But gifts must be earned. You have nibbled at my house without asking permission, and you haven't brought me any offerings. But still, I will give you a chance to earn my gifts. You must work for me. You must chop wood to feed my fire and clean my house and make my bed."
"Do I have to?" Zelda whined. "What do I look like, a housemaid?" But she didn't say it very loud.
She went outside to chop wood, but because she had never bothered to help anyone with their chores before, she didn't know how to split a stump or use an axe, and after a few half-hearted tries, she gave up. She gathered a few loose sticks that were lying around and brought them in. Then she tried to sweep the floor, but all she succeeded in doing was stirring up the dust. She wiped the crumbs from the table onto the floor, making it even dirtier, and washed the dishes so badly that food was still sticking to the plates when she put them away.
"Now, can I have my gifts?" Zelda asked.
"You have not done well," Mother Winter said. "You have nibbled at my house without asking permission, and you haven't brought me any offerings. You have not fed my fire or cleaned my house. Still, I will give you one more chance. Go upstairs and make my bed. Be sure to shake my feather bed out of the window, and shake it hard. For I am Mother Winter, and when you shake out my feather bed, you bring snow to the places in the world that get snow, and rain to the places that get rain."
"Oh, all right," Zelda sighed. She went upstairs and tried to pick up the feather bed, but it seemed too heavy for her.
"She'll never know if I shake it out or not," Zelda told herself, and so she just fluffed it a bit on the bed and went back down. And so in the upper world, there was no snow or rain, and the ground stayed dry and brown and thirsty.
"Now can I have my gifts?" Zelda asked.
Mother Winter sighed. "You have not done well. You have nibbled at my house without asking permission, and you haven't brought me any offerings. You have not fed my fire or cleaned my house, and you didn't even shake out my feather bed. Still, I will offer you a taste of my soup."
"Soup?" Zelda cried indignantly. "I didn't come here for soup. I came for gold, jewels, and beauty like my sister got."
"Very well," Mother Winter said. "I am the giver of gifts and the teacher of lessons. Return to your world, and you will find you have been given the gifts you deserve."
So Zelda went back all the long way through the silvery forest, past the oven and the apple tree and the field of snow, up the well, and at last she climbed out to find her sister Joanna waiting for her.
"Here I am, here I am," Zelda announced.
"But what has happened to you?" Joanna cried, for Zelda had changed.
Although her features remained the same, they now seemed as pinched and narrow and twisted as her mean spirit. And when she spoke, clouds of mosquitoes and flies flew out of her mouth. And so she remained until the end of her days, or at least until she learned a few lessons. Who knows? Maybe she'll go down the well again and do better this time, for Mother Winter is the teacher of lessons who will always give us another chance. This last story features animals from Africa. Kwanzaa is an African-American celebration of life from the 26th of December to the 1st of January. This story is about the value of collective work and responsibility and is often told to children during the week-long celebration of Kwanzaa. Here is The Great Drum. The lion sent out a message to all the animals to come to a very special meeting. Messengers went far and wide to spread the news of this meeting. As soon as the animals heard the message, they hurried right away to the council circle. It was about 3 weeks before they were all gathered. The lion was very disappointed. "We have got to find a way to get everyone together more quickly," shouted the lion. Anansi, the spider, had an idea.
"What we need," he explained, "is a great drum, one that can be heard all over the forest. When the great drum is sounded, everyone will know right away and come swiftly to meetings."
Everyone agreed that this was a fine idea. The animals were divided into groups, each group taking on a different part in the construction of the drum. The first group cut down a large tree. The second group trimmed off all the branches. The next group hollowed out the tree. Then sculptors worked to decorate the drum. They worked hard through many days. On their way home, at the end of each day, they would sing, "Life is labor. We are tired and hot. We work so hard because we work for our people." Everyone worked except the monkey. While the others labored, he found a nice shady spot to hide and eat berries all day long. When they were on their way back to the village, Monkey would join them as though he had been working with them all along. Monkey sang, "Life is labor. I am tired and hot. I work so hard because I work for my people." Anansi watched and knew exactly what Monkey was doing, but Anansi said nothing. When the great drum was finished, it had to be brought to the council circle. The problem was that the drum was very heavy, and no one wanted to carry it. It was then that Anansi spoke up.
"Since no one wants to carry the great drum, and we all have worked so hard already, I suggest that the laziest person among us carry the drum."
All the animals thought this was a good plan. Each of them looked around, trying to think who among them was the laziest. Who hadn't they seen working? First, one looked at Monkey, then another, and soon all eyes rested on the monkey. Monkey stepped out into the center of the circle and announced,
"I just want to make one thing perfectly clear. I will not carry that drum."
All the animals laughed. Anansi said,
"No one mentioned your name, Monkey. All we said was that the laziest person should carry the drum."
People were wondering to themselves who was laziest among them, but the monkey did not have to wonder. He knew very well who was laziest. He came forward and made it clear when he spoke. So it was agreed that the monkey had to carry the great drum to the council circle. So we've come to the end of our time together today. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel around the world to hear stories about the Hanukkah, Christmas, and other winter holidays. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading.